Radio Influence, podcasting redefined.
Good afternoon, everyone. It is Wednesday, Wednesday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Sunny Wednesday. No, it's not Wednesday.
Oh, Monday.
It's Monday. I was like, wait a second. She actually got me to say it. No. Happy
Tag,
Monday.
You're it.
Happy Monday, Val. Happy Monday.
Wow. And Beans, I'm 3 days ahead of everybody. That's where I'm at right now.
Boy, oh boy.
So listen, here's the deal. Quick introduction to the show. We just got off the phone with Patrick Byrne.
Indeed, we did.
And he had some very interesting information to share with us. And we just want to bring it to you. And I don't think there's any more that we really need to say. But the Kraken's coming.
The Kraken. I want the Kraken to... Man, I want to get my ass slapped by a Kraken.
I know. Wherever this Kraken is.
Just smack some asses.
Smack some asses, please.
Crush some folks, but smack the other folks at. Everybody needs a nice little, hey, come on, wake up.
Can we get the Kraken to throat punch anyone?
The Kraken doing some smacking.
So without
smacking
further,
the Kraken.
Without further, that's what the show name is going to be.
Smacking the Kraken?
Yes.
A Kraken smacking.
Without further ado, buckle up for our interview with Patrick Byrne. Patrick, thanks for joining us today.
Always an honor, Tracy and Frank. Always an honor to work with the independent media.
You know,
wonderful to have you here.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's great. So I'm just going to tell everybody before we start. Patrick came to me yesterday and said he needed to come on today to tell everybody some stuff. I don't know what he's going to say, but we're going to find out right now. So go ahead, my friend.
Thanks, Tracy. And I plan on being on. I'll warn your listeners. Only about 20, 30 minutes. I don't want to keep your whole show. I'm sure you have other great stuff to talk about. Or maybe less. But here's my understanding of things at the moment. In 2018, the election in Dallas was hacked. Texas hired a cybersecurity group to investigate, let's say there were irregularities in the 2018 Dallas election that tripped people's warning signs. They hired a security group to sort of reverse engineer if there was a hack, what was the hack? And like all of us, when you start looking into this election software or election technology, you start off thinking, okay, if you're someone like me, you start off thinking, okay, where I'm going to, you know, you have to study this whole system to find where's the weakest point, where could you? Well, it turns out it's child's play. It's a soup of vulnerabilities. The vulnerabilities, the stuff that's being promoted in the mass media about why this isn't true, there's only a small number of people who could have been dead and this and that, that's all straw man arguments. That's not where the hacks are. And this security group identified basically 10 different ways you can cheat an election when it's using Dominion technology. And I don't want to bore your listeners with the details, but they've had 2 years to study this. And they have it. It's slick as hell. And anyone who comes out and says this can't be done is either just they don't understand. Well, maybe they're looking at the straw man arguments. It's not that there were 500,000 dead people who voted. That's not the main event at all. You know, there's hundreds here and there. That's not the main event at all. The main event is there are so many different ways to defeat the system. Listen, anyone who tells you, well, first of all, they all say you should look up HBO did a documentary just 7 months ago called Kill Chain. You should look it up. And there's these guys, Comey and others, testifying to Congress. No, this is never connected to the internet, never connected to the internet, never connected to the internet. You know, step one in the instruction manual is connect your machine to the internet. There's an Ethernet cable port for a reason. It's ridiculous to say this isn't connected to the internet. Control of the thumb drives turns out to be enormously important. There's all kinds of ways you can train voter. Listen, this is the dirty secret of America. I've known this for about 16 years from both sides. People remember, and I'll swear this, I don't mean to disappoint you, but I think I should make clear where I'm coming from. I'm not a Trump voter. all my life, I voted Libertarian. I've never voted for a Republican or a Democrat. So I'm really I just want to see the Constitution be well served. I started hearing in maybe 16, 18 years ago from friends on both sides of the aisle who were involved at the grassroots level, Patrick, you can't believe how easy it is to cheat. And it's basically, remember when, you know, so for example, one trick somebody told me was, suppose I'm a Republican and I want to cancel a bunch of Democratic votes. I just put an ink pad in my pocket, one of the little printer ink pads I put in my pocket. If I go down, I volunteer at a Democrat precinct, heavy Democrat precinct, and if somebody walks up that is obviously a Democrat, I rub my finger on the inside of the pocket, pick up some ink, and then as I take their sheet from them, I just rub a certain little place. It's the barcode or something, and that will cancel. I can then go feed into the machine and smile and say, thank you for your vote, and they walk away, and they don't understand that that by that little smudge, I just canceled their vote. Well, I was hearing this 16 to 18 years ago. And I also sort of grew up knowing the score. My family is from, anyway, there's much more voter fraud in America than people know. And there's like been a deliberate effort for a decade or more to downplay that. Well, listen, we've gone from a world of ballot stuffing as we learned about it in civics class to ballot stuffing is 20th century or 19th century. What this stuff is ballot stuffing by other means. And I mean, I don't want to bore you with all that, but they're so simple. You can try, if you get somebody to use a Sharpie or something so that their vote's not going to really be read well or rejected and the machine rejects it, there's a green button. Do you know about the green button?
Yes, I do. I know all about the green button. Well,
explain to your listeners the green button.
Explain to me.
So the green button is a feature on the voting machines, especially in Arizona. This came up where if you click this green button, it accepts your ballot. It doesn't count it, and it sorts it in with the rest of the votes that have been cast. So where it's almost like a safeguard that's supposed to be there to tell the voter, you're not supposed to do this, you're not supposed to do this, you're not supposed to do this. If you hit the green button, it accepts the ballot. If you don't hit the green button, it either spits it back out or it segregates it into a separate drawer in the machine so that it can then be looked over and they can determine the integrity of that vote or what the voter's, you know, intention was when they cast it. And this has been a problem.
If the poll worker is standing next to you, mm-hmm. and you're somebody in a hurry or you're a little old lady and you're doing and it gives you something and the poll worker says, oh, that's OK, it'll accept it when people look at it, it'll accept it. Just hit the green button. You know, 95% of people. We're just going to hit the green button. And Tracy's right. That goes into another pile. But what really happens is those votes go into a stack that the administrator can allocate. You think what's going to happen is what Tracy just said, but it's in the owner's. I mean, it's in the instruction manual. You can the guy with administrator privileges and coming at the end of the day, and there's 762 votes waiting to be allocated. He can just like drag and drop and give those to whoever he wants.
So.
It's hilarious how simple this is.
So, Patrick, you're coming to us today and you're saying things that, you know, Sidney Powell's been saying. We've been hearing this stuff. Do you know anything else, you know, or have an idea of where anything's going? Or do you have any foresight into how this is going to be, you know, adjudicated for this election? Because clearly there are major issues with electronic voter fraud this time around. And I know the group you're talking about. I know the people in it. And I understand their investigation very, very well. And it was something else to behold. I'll say that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's pretty. Well, there's a lot more. And I've been around them and some other cyber groups who are involved and some hackers, some really funny, interesting people, and who have been working on this now even more intensively for several months. What's scary is it seems to me that they knew the government that was warned about this by August. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that they had a detailed plan of what was going to happen.
Yep.
Kind of the Department of Homeland Security, frankly, had a detailed plan of what was a briefing on what was going to happen. And that's exactly what's happened. So when it does make you wonder what's going to happen in the broader picture, and I'm not a lawyer, I can talk in terms of philosophy. The atomic concept of liberalism is consent of the governed. Everything's about consent, consensual exchange, consent of the governed. Liberalism properly understood. You know what I mean,
Trixie? Yep.
And we've all agreed on a set of rules on how that's, you know, the top of the monopoly has a top of the box has the rules. And when you sit down to play, that's the rules. We shouldn't be renegotiating on the fly. I've spent time in all parts of the world that do not have a good rock solid constitution. And they're not, I didn't see anything I ever want to see here. And people don't understand how fragile it is and how tenuous it is and how the natural order of things is not the kind of society we live in. And that's because we agreed on this constitution. I actually will mention my doctoral dissertation. The title was Jealousy and Confidence. And that's a line out of reference to Thomas Jefferson, 1798, the Kentucky. Something he wrote in 1798, and he said free government is founded upon. Oh, and in the 18th century, jealousy meant mistrust. It didn't mean romantic mistrust necessarily, just mistrust. So jealousy. Free government is founded upon jealousy and not confidence, because it is jealousy which causes us to bind down governments with constitutions. So the point is, the rules may be imperfect. Well, whatever the rules are right now on the top of the box is what everyone's got to follow. Now, in a deep philosophical sense, the will of the people, I believe, has been thwarted. And I say this not as a Trump voter. I say this as a guy who I just want, you know, if I was on television on Fox the night Obama got elected, they had me on Fox Business helping to call it. And I didn't like the snidiness, frankly, I heard then about, well, like he was illegitimate. And I point out to everyone then he didn't elect himself. You know, he's the president now, and I never thought twice about it. And I didn't really in this case, though, it's really what they have done is deliberately created a strategy of creating so much doubt and confusion that people are going to wonder where to put their loyalties. Then they have this is the way revolutions happen. There's another source of legitimacy, or there's two sources of legitimacy, and all the powers of civil society and mass media and everything go to work to force people to accept one of them. And I think that's what we're seeing now.
So everybody is always talking about proof, Patrick, right? Proof. Can you prove that this actually happened this time? Can they get their hands on the forensics to be able to prove this? Or is that a lost cause at this point because they know to cover their tracks? And, you know, are these lawsuits going to make a dent? And you know, what do you think about that? Well,
first of all, at the end of the day, I got to say what the U.S. Supreme Court says. I guess I'm a legal realist. At the end of the day, for the U.S. Supreme Court, what they do, no matter how egregious, is that's what separates us from the other side. However, it has to be recognized this thing was so illegitimate. And the point here, there's so many straw men, and I see all these straw men being floated in the mass media. It isn't a claim that there are that it's widespread, like in every precinct, although it may well be. It's that in five places, it was done very strategically, and by completely corrupting the hell out of five places, you could steal, you know, the election. And those five places being Atlanta, Philly, Milwaukee, Maricopa County, and Detroit. And in each of those places, there is enormous evidence. And it's certainly, I don't want to say more about the evidence, but first of all, the mathematical evidence never goes away. And mathematical evidence is, statistical evidence is admitted in voter fraud cases. A court system has the authority to set aside, I mean, judges, when there's really widespread voter fraud, judges set aside elections. I don't think it's plausible to say we redo it. I think that what needs to happen is, if the evidence is public and compelling, at the end of the day, it's what the Constitution says. If they don't have the state legislators have to decide whether there's been widespread fraud in their states or not. And that's going to be I hope they decide that by looking at the evidence and making the appropriate decision and not being swayed by politics, not being politicians. But they decide. And if they don't seat electors, you know, this is what happened in 1876, right? And you go look up that election. This yep. something like this happened. And the dirty deal, I think they called it. That's unfortunately what ended Reconstruction in the South. But so I don't want to go much beyond I don't want to go into the strategy of what's going to happen or what could happen. I don't know. And I'm extremely, listen, it's not cool. I've lived in Lebanon. I've made 40 trips to Lebanon, many of them Lebanon, the country, Beirut, and had friends there. And it's always been I always felt it was a warning to me. People right at the end of at the end of the Civil War, I started going, and people could just see this family who were my friends. And they used to impress upon me, and the Lebanese used to try to impress upon me how this was before the war. They would take me to a street that was like, they would say Rodeo Drive was in Hollywood, and this was the Mercedes dealer, and that was the Lamborghini dealer, but it's all just piles of rubble. And I gradually came to understand they were telling me it could happen anywhere. People, there's nothing cool. I hope people aren't licking their lips about the prospect of a civil war. People have no idea how thin the veneer of civilization is.
Yeah, I think one of the most important things at this point, Patrick, is going to be public dissemination of all of this information in a way that is understandable and consumable by the general public. You know, that's the biggest thing. There's so much minutia here involved. And I know just from studying the stuff that I've studied over the past several months, that, you know, reconstructing this and explaining it to the American people and even these state legislatures, most of which I believe in the states contested, are all Republican. Not that that should even matter at this point, but we need to make sure it's consumable and so dispersed widely that it's undeniably accepted.
And yeah, it may be. It doesn't even look like a close call to me from what I'm looking. And I mean, states where they're a difference of 10 or 20,000 votes shifts the election.
Yeah.
May have had as much as 500,000, 600,000. It's not, by the way, don't believe the straw man arguments that the NBCs of the world are feeding, that somebody, there aren't 600,000 dead people in that state who voted. No, it's nothing like that. That's a misdirection. There's so much slop that is in the system. It's of voting. So many different cheats, from how you train your election workers to using to handing out Sharpies instead of ballpoints, or press the red button or press the green button. No, don't worry about it. Press the green button. It'll come out in the wash. Things like that. There's so much cheating, and there's enormous amounts of grassroots affidavits from people, you know, things that they personally experienced in the voting booth from both sides. What's interesting, there's some very honest Democrats who are part of this, but it isn't just that. Once you're in the machines, anyone who tells you these things are air gapped and tight, they're just talking through their hat. They're not, it's not at all. It's a joke. These are, an eighth grader could hack this bullshit.
So how do you know all this? How do you know all this? And then Frank, you take your question.
Well, I've been working with that and other cybersecurity experts and hackers and such on this for some months.
Okay. So you're being a patriot
again. Part of this project. Say again?
So you're being a patriot again. That's all I wanted to
know. Well, I don't know, but I'm looking out for my own hide. I understand that that there are parts of the government who feel I'm basically Edward Snowden, who just didn't leave. But, you know, I'll stand answer for what I've done. But it really is not about Trump, although it's – to me, I really come at this. I can't believe people are playing with fire to have done this. Well, I think this all – the other thing to know, tied into my other story, this didn't all start now. This is a coup that started at least in 2015. I was part of it. I'm the guy that had set up Hillary Clinton for a bribe, as I explained on your show before. There's been an attempt – by an agent to take over the United States government and have it compromised since at least 2015. Now, and I'm not saying Barack Obama, don't believe that Barack Obama is the mastermind of this or that the mastermind is necessarily in the United States. But this is the continuation of the coup I'm describing that started in 2015.
Go ahead, Frank.
The thing I would ask is, have you estimated how far back this has been used and to what degree? Like, what we've been observing now, when you see that Donald Trump probably got upwards of 73, 74 million votes out of this election, and that his non-existent opponent has outgarnered him by 5-6 million votes. I'm just wondering, with the real farcical, cartoonish way, a degree of output they had to go to be able to eliminate Donald Trump's voter turnout. What was it like in the last 15 years when you have on average two candidates facing off in every major election every 4 years that were not necessarily dangerous to the established order of things? How long has this system or this system been in place in this country and other countries, but hasn't really had to be overdone like it had to be done this year?
Yeah, it's funny. I mentioned that I'm kind of come from a family that knows the score. I come from my family's all from South Jersey, and I'd say that when they were, say, working class Irish, who over the last two generations, my generation, my parents and uncle's generation did well. But we come from a world where we know the score. We know how things work. And it's just hilarious. This is election fraud goes back, you know, to Tammany Hall and stuff. It's just been part of the Irish experience. There's all these jokes that get told around the Irish dining room table in my family's about how it all worked, both what was participated in by my, you know, grandparents, brothers, and that kind of stuff. The world's much dirtier. I always know when I'm talking to a novice, when I start talking about organized crime and people roll their eyes like I've seen too many movies, they have no idea how much of that there is, and they don't know the score. So with that as a background, I'd say that it worked one way until about 10 or 15 years ago when things started getting computerized as they did, which was more than that, 20 or 25 years ago. But I would say it was probably 10 or 15 years ago, the techniques just sort of shifted. So it's not ballot stuffing like you're walking up with 10 ballots hidden up your sleeve as you go to turn in one ballot and your cousin Patty looks the other way as you slip in the 10 right behind it. That's ballot stuffing. It's done electronically now. So I think that's been 10 or 15 years. I can tell you that I believe that I'm given to understand that this happened or was supposed to happen in 2016, and it didn't happen because some offensive measures were taken by somebody, and that's why Hillary Clinton, like Joe Biden, had been told you don't really have to campaign too hard. It's all going to be taken care of, and that's why Hillary went so ballistic that election night in 2016, because her furor was really coming. It wasn't just disappointed from her lifetime ambitions. She had been told, don't worry, we got it hacked. We got the fixes.
So then what happened?
Why didn't they do it again?
So then what happened? Did somebody get the drop on that and they pulled the biggest upset?
Is that why? Yeah, I mean, is that why we had hundreds of thousands of mail-in ballots being brought into the back rooms? Is that why that happened?
Yeah, it didn't. It happened. I don't assume it was someone in the United States who did that. That offense hack, but they shut down the hack on that. They shut down the hackers on the night of the election night. So it didn't happen. And that's why Hillary was so furious. It didn't happen this time. I can tell you this guy who runs DHS, CISA, the infrastructure, who came out the other day and said, oh, this is the most secure election in history. Mm. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He's a lawyer from Microsoft. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And he's the guy running CISA. Anyone who tells you this stuff is tamper-proof is just talking through their hat. It's hilarious. If you're a tech, I built a $2 billion tech company. I don't normally, wouldn't normally, but I'm a guy who built a $2 billion tech company. I know what's bullshit and what isn't. I can tell you, anyone, this is so, anyone who's, the people who are saying that are immediately, the mainstream media discredited in my mind. Anyone who looks at this equipment, and it's not just the equipment, it's the combination of the equipment and the way that people are trying, just look at the instruction manuals. There's, you know, it tells you to connect it to the internet. It tells you to, this is how the administrator can allocate all the votes that are built up in that pot. And that's just say 2 out of 10. There's 10 ways this, and there was the green button I told you about. There's like 10 different hacks. There may be more than that. So anyone who tells you this can't be done, it doesn't take much cheating for from the poll workers or the county. I mean, it can be done with a very small number of people, and you do it intensively in those 5 cities, and those 5 cities trip those states. Isn't that funny? This should look just. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. It's okay. I mean, it's disgusting. It's funny in a way because it's laughable how they're trying to convince us that this is actually something that we should just accept. But let me spell something out for you, Patrick, real quick. And I know you wanted to hop off.
Before you do, let me tell you the thing I think is funny that people should think about. Look at the states where Trump was behind 600 and 800,000 votes, and then Biden surged and he got 14,000 votes ahead, or then Biden surged and he got 23,000 votes ahead. That's not normally, I mean, making up a 600 or 8,000, it's funny how he kept making up these $800,000 differences with just the right number of votes plus, you know, some giblets. Isn't that kind of odd?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it is. It's just so uncanny. I mean, I can't believe it happened, you know, but look.
So what were you going to tell me?
This is what I'm going to throw out there as a kind of scenario for you, and you let me know what you think. And then I have a question. Is it true that, because I remember, you know, in talking to the guys you're talking about, they did thwart that in 2016. They have actually been able to document it. Why it didn't happen again this time is a very big question. And I know these guys were raising red flags about this everywhere. And you're right. They did try to get this to folks to try and explain it to people. Is it possible that it was thwarted to some extent, which is why they needed to bring in all these mail-in ballots to the back rooms of these specific polling locations at the last minute to feed through machines? Because if they didn't do that, we would never have known, in quotes, that this was going on. And then secondly, are there any whistleblowers flipping and actually becoming good Americans, stepping forward to, you know, kind of disclose their role in this?
Yeah, there are good Americans, not, and you know, from both sides. There are Democrats who are coming, who had a role in it, or people who were just, you know, honest Americans went down and tried to participate in our process, and who have who are describing it. And it's there's dozens, frankly. Yeah, there's not any doubt in my mind if all the legal process could go through. But really, if there were a deus ex machina solution, it would be that, like, you would freeze time and we would run a fair election in this country and replace all this junk stuff. You know, I happen to know something about this because I funded a blockchain voting company out of, I think it was MIT, called Votes, V-O-A-T-Z. And about 5 years ago, remember I was running Overstock and I built this, I called it the blockchain tech stack for humanity. 6 years ago, I identified the most important processes of society to put on the blockchain. And it was land governance and central banking and capital markets and supply chains and identity and voting. And I found a company, and I was the angel money behind it. It's called Votes. They have a solution to all this that could be implemented. However, it's just not feasible. It's just, you know, for the country, there's going to be a terrible legal battle. I assume the state courts overwhelmingly Democrat. The state legislators are going to have their chance at things. There will be civil cases. Don't forget, you know, how horrified we are at the thought of Jim Crow, of black people being denied their vote or their vote suppressed because they couldn't recite the Constitution by heart or something. Those are the kind of tests they did if you were black. Shouldn't laugh, but that, you know, that's how they used to do it. Well, for every vote that you let a fake, every time you let a fake vote enter this system, that's an equal act of voter suppression. You're eliminating the vote of one person on the other side. It just isn't visible. There aren't barking dogs and cops outside trying to scare people. But it's this similar voter suppression. If we had the kinds of stories that are emerging and the kinds of numbers, which are hundreds of thousands in various states, that are goofball votes in one way or the other, that are illegal votes, and in the most broadest sense of that term, that's hundreds of thousands of people in that state who you might as well just had cops with German Shepherds outside trying to scare them away from the voting booth because their votes got suppressed. Yeah. So, but we may have, you know, there may be collectively millions of such events across the country, and yet people aren't horrified by that possibility. That seems odd. The mainstream media doesn't seem horrified by the possibility. They're in the mode of trying to tell America, no, don't pay attention to any of this evidence.
Well, I guess it's based on who you want to be the winner. I've had people flat out tell me, albeit on the internet. If there's a cheat that gets me to win, I'm fine with it. Go ahead.
Listen, if this were Obama, I would be out there. I'd probably be out there, have been out there earlier and louder and harder. And that's not because I didn't vote for him either. And it's a matter of I try to bend over backwards to be fair. And to be honest, I've probably not been fair to the president by staying as silent as long as I have. That shouldn't be the attitude that Americans, it's taken the system. And if they do, it's because we got rid of civics classes and started teaching classes in, you know, social theory.
It's this whole thing. I mean, just the other day, Patrick, before we let you go, I was reading into the Trump campaign's lawsuit in Pennsylvania, and some interveners for the Democrats filed on the lawsuit. And it was the NAACP, the League of Women Voters and stuff like that. And one of the claims in the Pennsylvania lawsuit. Yeah, the ACLU, right. One of the claims in the Trump campaign's lawsuit was that these ballots, these mail-in ballots in Pennsylvania were cured before the election against state election law, even election law confirmed by the Supreme Court in Pennsylvania. They filed affidavits on behalf of the Democrats that these voters are literally testifying to the fact that the Democrat Party called them days before Election Day to have them go down to their precinct and cure their ballot so it would count. This is on the docket in the Pennsylvania lawsuit. The Democrats, on behalf of the Democrats, admitting they're cheating in their own lawsuit.
This is why my brother, now passed, he had a funny expression. He'd say, you want to play when people would argue, we get in arguments or these kinds of situations in life. He'd say, hey, you want to play Monopoly? Read the top of the box. What's the top of the box say? Top of the box says the state legislators set the rules to which the other how to run an election, to which the other side says, yeah, but because COVID. Well, I'm not sure why that argument doesn't follow, and the Constitution doesn't say unless COVID. There's no reason the state legislators in each state couldn't stay apprised of the situation during the pandemic and meet and in whatever capacity and
make law.
That's how it has to work. And I think I think that Alito went weak in the knees by they should have enjoined Pennsylvania from doing that. You can't have the government officials coming out who are not authorized, who do not have legitimate power, changing rules on something so fundamental. Now, look at this. He told them, OK, you can go ahead. A few days before the election, he said, you can go ahead and accept ballots that don't meet the terms that your state legislature set. However, you got to keep them segregated. Well, that was kind of a weak answer. I think he should have said, no, that's the top of the box says the state legislators' rules are the rules. Those are the rules you have to follow, whatever state you're in. He didn't do that. He said, you got to segregate them. Well, what Pennsylvania did?
They said, screw you. We're not doing anything that you said, and we're going to keep everything together.
Yeah, that's not right. That's not right. And if the Supreme Court lets that happen, they're pinning a pick me. They're pinning a sign that says kick me on the back of election law, because from then on, this is going to happen forever. And there's going to be a Supreme Court precedent that says, oh, well, it's OK. The Constitution says that your state legislator's rules are the rules. But no, it's OK. If you're some election official that think that you've got an appropriate reason, you and the governor or whatever can make up anything you want. If they let that stand in Pennsylvania, there is no election law. There's no it just wipes out that constitutional point. So just on principle, before you even get into the numbers,
yep.
I think that they should disqualify all Well, then you get to they didn't segregate it. Well, it's quite a thorny issue, huh?
Isn't it? Isn't it almost insurmountable? And people always say, you know, oh, well, they think we're stupid. No, they don't. They know that they know we know. They don't care. They don't care that we know. They're doing anything and everything to create a chaos scenario that seems insurmountable to actually fix. And here we are. But,
well, you know, at that point, at some point, that's where they're in. It's actually worse than you say. It isn't just that they don't care. It's actually they get some frisson from the fact. Mm. So I lived in communist China 83, 84, and I saw how party line, I spent time in Vietnam too. And I saw it back in the 80s, and I saw how party lines work. And I used to wonder, I'd say to my Chinese roommates, kind of, how do you believe this stuff? And the new party line on Mao, when I came here, this was what you guys said was the truth on Mao. After 4 months, the party line changed on what it is, and now this is the received truth. Don't you see how you're contradicting yourselves? And I finally realized Orwell had it right. They kind of want, it isn't that the people don't understand that these different things aren't true. They understand that they're having to bend a knee. And that's what the party wants, that they have to bend a knee and willingly go along with this. And it's just that daily reminder that you're not your own now. So I think that it's part of the goon revolution, and this is a goon revolution. You know, the steps are demoralize the people, disorient them with chaos and such. And then you create a system where nobody knows who the legitimate side is. And then you have the civic society and the mass media and everybody come down on the revolutionary side. And so this is a goon revolution. And, you know, I do think it's true that if this goes through, look at what's gone on in the last 4 years. Do you think it's going to get any better under Kamala Harris?
Well, Patrick, let me just ask you on that. What's your level of confidence that they have finally, stepped on a landmine that is not going to be as easy to just roll on over and smooth over with whatever kind of complicit media that they have?
I think that people will get the government they accept. And I'll tell you what. Well, Jerry Garcia gave an interview years ago where he described being at, you know, some park in the playing in some park in the 68 or something. And Reagan sent in the National Guard, I think. And there was a standoff between the hippies who were dancing and having a peace rally, nothing violent, and the National Guard who stayed 100 yards away. And he said, you know, that was a dumb idea. Who really thought that would make the situation better? But I tell you, in any situation like that, what I do is I look in the crowd for the person who picks up the first rock or bottle and throws it at the police, because that's how I know who the main asshole on the scene is. That's the main asshole. You know, we really want to keep this non-kinetic, and it's going to matter a lot to keep it non-kinetically. And who knows what deals emerge that let that happen. So, but will people... I mean, I don't want to be calling for revolution, but I do think that if this goes down, I mean, if the Supreme Court lets this stand, there's a precedent that means every election official in every state in America can do what he wants. It's just ridiculous. So
if the Supreme Court lets this stand, we no longer have a country.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, what the remedy is a different question. And the remedy... there's all kinds of remedies that could be worked out that include negotiations between the parties. But there can't the state legislators have a role, too. Do they get enough evidence presented to them that says that their state did not have a free and fair election, in which case you can't certify anybody? But then the Supreme Court has a role, too. Somebody's got to step up with some juice like that. And if the Supreme Court lets this just slide, I don't know how they expect, you know, we will be living in Venezuela. It'll be goon. We're in a goon society at that point, because there's just been such obvious goonism for the last year leading right up to and including this election.
Wow. Well, I hope you'll come back on as things go and update us, Patrick, on what's going on. And I'm waiting for some court filings today. And I'm going to be poking through those with a fine tooth comb, as you know. So
Well, I don't know anything about scheduling, and I'm just sort of thank you very much. I'm going to try to keep you. It's good to know that you're talking about this and on it. I'm just going to try to keep you a couple steps ahead of the news.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I'm just waiting for Sydney. You know, I don't know who you're working with, but I know she's been working on some really hardcore stuff. So I'm waiting for Sydney Powell to release the Kraken, as it were.
Yeah, I'm not working with, I've never met Sydney.
Well, God bless you anyway.
I'm working with the people who've been trying to reverse engineer the hack, the cyber, that stuff. And it's been going on. We've been on it for months. Okay, I'm going to sign off. Thank you, Frank and Tracy.
All right. All right, Frank.
Yes.
What do you think?
I think that what we were given just only opens up the door to so much more. You know, it's almost like the same way we have someone like Patrick, who's lived a very interesting life. The one thing I kept telling myself is this guy has lived such an amazing, interesting life. At times, he's almost like James Bond. Other times, he's just a regular old all-American titan of industry. And he, his involvement with in the Russia situation, everything else, almost like a Forrest Gump kind of a character.
Pretty crazy.
So he just finds himself in these amazing situations. And I think that there's a lot more than meets the eye or the ear. So with everything that we've been hearing coming from all angles of this scenario with the election and those who are out there conducting investigations, some bigger than others. I loved how that there was the discernment between old school, I've been saying traditional types, traditional forms of election fraud. Yeah. Where, you know, you're ballot stuffing, you're keeping poll watchers away, you know, all of those traditional types of fraud that are really 20th century and below, where now we are in this digital age where, I mean, God knows. I mean, this is such a multi. Oh, I know. That's what I'm saying. So for everything that we got today, I'm even more excited for everything that we didn't get.
Yeah. And, you know, I have to say there are some people out there that think that, you know, because Patrick Byrne has said that he, you know, supported Obama and he's friends with Warren Buffett and, you know, all this, he can't be a good guy. And I get it. And I understand those criticisms and I understand. But I mean, from everything, I'll be honest, from everything that I know and the time I've spent speaking with him and how forthright he is and how he cares about the country, whether he aligns with you politically or not, I wouldn't keep having him on the show if I didn't think that he was speaking with integrity and wasn't the real deal. I'll just put it that way because, you know, his story is absolutely incredible, almost to the point of being unbelievable, but it's true. So there's that, yeah. You know, hope he comes back soon. I will tell you again, I can vouch for the group he's talking about. I know the group he's talking about. I have seen their information and I know exactly who they are. So he didn't know that I knew that, just so that everybody is aware. He didn't know that I knew the group he was talking about. So that to me is already an instant check mark next to everything he's saying. So I wanted to just quickly go over some of the events of Saturday, Frank.
Okay, let's do it.
Saturday.
Matt gave me a whole different kind of set of events, I'm sure, that are different from your own.
Well, yeah, I mean, Matt was probably out on the streets, right?
He was looking for fights, yeah.
Good for Matt. I hope he beats some ass.
Well, I mean, the funniest thing about it is that, well, it's not the funniest thing because it's actually quite pathetic and enraging what we're seeing going on here. But it really only seems that the thugs on the streets, they're only going to take action if it is A, 25-1 or B, old people, women and children.
Yep.
If they're facing off with full grown men, they run for the hills. And then they wait for the police to form a barrier between them and whatever kind of patriot group is on out there. And they taunt the patriot group through the barricade of the police.
Yeah, that's what we saw over and over again. And because every time these men got their hands on these little twerps, they were destroyed.
Man, I love it.
It's something else. So quick story. First of all, Saturday, I was standing, we went down, Kristen and I were there, and we were staying at the Willard, and we went downstairs and into Freedom Plaza, which is steps away, and we were standing there, and all of a sudden, everybody starts to scream, and what do we see coming down the street but the caravan of President Trump and his people, like right down the street, right there in front of us, literally 2 feet away. The energy, there were probably, I don't know, I don't know how many people, 3,000 to 5,000 people there at that point, at that very point right there. And this is, again, 2 hours before the event actually started. It was incredible. It was the most exhilarating experience that I've ever really had. It was everybody's energy all at once, just overwhelmingly positive energy. Hard to explain. If you feel energy, you understand what I mean. Something else. Then we got our little briefing, we did our thing, and it was time to go down to the event. By this point, Frank, there were hundreds of thousands of people. I mean, easily hundreds of thousands. I mean, the million mark. I was on a radio show this morning where they said now that the police have come out and confirmed there were over a million people there.
It looked, I was looking at this, I said, I can't believe that some news organizations actually tried to say that this was a dud. A couple of thousand showed up.
Oh my God.
I couldn't believe it, because just by a couple of still frame aerial shots, I said, in this frame right there, I'm looking at least 250,000 people.
Easily. In one still shot. You're absolutely right. And I will give you a couple of markers for you guys to determine what you want to believe. Do you want to believe that 10,000 people show? It's just laughable.
It is. It's laughable. So
it was scary, Frank. And I'll tell you why. A couple things. Number one, we had there were security at the march there. The guys from 1A Praetorian came down with a big team. This is Robert Patrick Lewis and Yoda and 1800, all the guys we got to know. And I know, you know, we know Robert Patrick Lewis for years now. He's an amazing patriot, just a Green Beret, wrote a series called The Pact. If you guys haven't downloaded or listened to this book series yet, you're missing out on something amazing. But they were down there doing security, and we had to make our way through this crowd to this tent that's next to the stage. And I was absolutely terrified because there was no pathway for us and they had to make one. And I will be honest with you, everybody there just backed away a little bit, let us through, even though they had no idea who we were. They were like, who are these people cutting in front of us? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They still backed away and let us through. I had a few little interactions with some folks who basically attempted to trample me to death. It was terrifying. I was very shaken up. I'm like 5'3", you know, 140 pounds soaking wet. And I was nearly destroyed getting to the stage area. It was really scary. We got there, we did our thing, and then it was time to march. And we were just—
Did you tell everybody I said hello?
During my speech?
Or did you get that text after you got off the stage?
Oh no, I got off the stage. I didn't even see that text at all.
You said, I'm going on, I'm speaking at 12:33 or something. It was like 10 minutes before you went on. I said, oh, good. I said, break a leg. Tell everybody I said hello.
Oh, see, I wish I would have seen it, because we didn't get any text messages at all throughout the day. Everything was jammed.
I heard everything, that nobody was getting texts.
Yeah, no, it was jammed up. So we made our way through there. Then it was time to march, right? So I'm not going to talk about my march through because it would take too long, but you couldn't move in the streets. You could not move. It was packed like sardines in a sardine can. And what happened was this. I met a group of people who walked all the way to the Supreme Court. It's 2.5 miles, marched the whole thing, came back, and people were still leaving Freedom Plaza at that point. So in other words, they lapped them 4 miles before they even got there. If you know the Supreme Court area, there's the steps of the Supreme Court. And if you look behind you, you can see the Capitol way down the road. These people, shoulder to shoulder from the Supreme Court all the way back to the Capitol. I mean, the streets all around were packed with people. It was absolute insanity. There were so many it was definitely over a million people there, without a doubt. You could not walk without bumping into a Trump supporter anywhere in D.C. Everybody was wearing red. People had draped themselves in the American flag.
If everybody just picked a state to move to, we can turn it into a paradise. We can flip the bird at the federal government and deny everything. We can deny every bit of block grant money. We can deny as is our right through the 10th Amendment. If we just all moved to picked one state,
it's like the Free State Project.
Well, listen, whatever the hell had happened with the Free State Project and New Hampshire, mm-hmm. It came to life in 2020.
It was the most breathtakingly amazing experience I've ever had, I'm claustrophobic. So even through my terror, it was the most amazing experience. And if you guys can, head on over to First Amendment Praetorian. It's 1apraetorian.com. And, you know, try and give these guys a few bucks.
Matt said it was the greatest thing he ever did in his life.
It was the greatest thing ever.
Well, Matt, he also said I think it was the greatest thing because he said that he locked eyes with the president as he walked by. As he drove by.
Yeah.
He said, he said, we actually locked eyes, Frank. I swear to God. He said in that moment, he tried transferring over whatever was left of his life to the president. He said, you could take the remaining years of my life.
Oh, my God. Matt's hysterical. I never would have found him. Never in a million years. But I will tell you, the evening was quite interesting. You guys have seen all the videos. You have seen all of the nonsense that's been going on. I just want to say I was sitting down eating dinner in that outdoor patio at the Willard. We had had reservations for 8 p.m. and we ended up moving them to 5 because we were just starving and exhausted and sore from all the walking and stuff. So we ate dinner early. We were there for about 2 hours at around a little after, right around 7, actually. We stopped. We got up. We paid the check. We left. Not even an hour later, those fireworks went off right under our table. So we were upstairs in the room. We saw everybody gathered outside of the hotel singing the Star Spangled Banner. We were able to see the street where some of this was going down. The entire night, all you heard was screaming, yelling. There was literally a war going on in the streets of D.C. Patriots versus a-holes all night
Patriots
long.
Versus the people who supposedly won the election.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
It's like, you won. Go home.
Yeah.
Stay home.
You know,
apparently we're just spinning our wheels in mud here, aren't we?
The thing about it is this, Frank, there are many of us and we outnumber them by far. And I think they finally got a taste of that the other night. And these were men on the streets of D.C. I don't care what you say, whatever group they are, if they were in a group or not. These were guys. For the most part, it was 90% men that went out into the street that night. And I will say, I think they were looking for a fight. So that's that.
Yep. No, it was good to watch from afar. I mean, there's going to be times in the future that these things have got to be considered work mandatory for me, especially if it's on the East Coast and within 4 hours driving distance. But
I would say this was a work mandatory trip for sure.
Yeah, I know, but I
get it. You have family. I get it.
All in all,
there'll be another one.
I was fine with staying home with the baby this time around.
Well, I FaceTimed you and opened up the window so you could hear everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I forgot who told me, but they said that they can hear the chanting and the crowds from the White House easily.
Yeah. Yeah. It was an honor to be a part of that. It was an honor to be a part of it. I'll never forget it the rest of my life. It was absolutely magical. And gets me a little choked up, to be honest. But that's it for today, Frank. We've got a lot of work to do. This week's going to be insane, which is why I've already called it Wednesday. You have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with...
Monday Val, Sunny Monday Val, and
Sunny Monday Beans. You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and RadioInfluence.com. We will see you on Wednesday.
Lighter.
I'm Jerry Petuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out RadioInfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.